Welcome back to the Breakthrough Podcast, Discovering New Pathways. My name is Omar Mohammed, your host, and always helping you to improve and progress in business and in life. Over there, we have my co-host, Leon Robinson IV. Hey, Leon, welcome back.
Hey, what's up, Omar? Yeah, man, welcome back.
All right, good deal. So as always, we have a guest. But before we get to our guest, we'll let you know that the Breakthrough Podcast is brought to you by the Minority Business Development Agency out of Washington, D.C., and tell you about some of the activities that we have at Morgan State University for those who are formerly incarcerated and now are entrepreneurs. So, of course, we have this wonderful podcast here. We have a segment in a magazine, in the Return of Citizens magazine, which we write an article and we highlight an organization or a individual that was formerly incarcerated that currently have their own business. As well, we do a Ride University, just no more than 10 minutes of just powerful resources to help those who are on this entrepreneurial journey. We have a meetup that we do on a monthly basis. And we call it a meetup and continuing education. So this past meetup, we had a tax person come in to talk about taxes for your business. We have an annual event. And this year, we're doing a specialized training in which we have we're teaching individuals about the rehab construction industry. So really excited about that opportunity as well. So without further ado, you can find out about all of this at edacmorgan.com. That's E-D-A-C, morgan.com. And we're also on Instagram, at Ride Small Biz. So without further ado, we want to welcome to the Breakthrough Podcast, Sean Frank. Hey, Sean, welcome to the Breakthrough Podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you. How you doing, Omar? Leon, how's it? Pleasure to be here. I'm glad that you guys invited me. Got a lot to say.
Thank you. I know you do. So hold up before you just say. Let's set the stage first. Before you jump into your business, excuse me, we always ask individuals, you know, when they come on, how long have you been home? And after returning home, what were your plans?
I've been home. My journey has been unique because it came in parts. I was home. I actually came home from incarceration after 12 and a half years And that was my second incarceration. Prior to that, I did a 10-year incarceration bid. And when I say these incarcerations, meaning day for day of my life was taken away from me. Yes, due to my own, you know, choice making. No one else's fault. I want to be clear on that. My choices led for me to be incarcerated. And as a result of that, it's twofold. It allowed me to gain an insight of myself, of my inner strengths. I really never knew what my talents. Some people knew they were rappers. Some people knew they were sports people. I didn't know what my purpose was. I knew I was good at commanding people, leading people. I knew I was a good orator. I knew I was a good articulative speech. I knew I had those things, charismatic. People were drawn to me. And that awakening came while I was incarcerated because I asked myself, what can I do? What am I good for? And when you don't have a worthiness, then after you're lost. So I had to find my worthiness. To answer your question in short, I came home in 2018 and I had my parole transfer to Atlanta. My family's down there. We're New Yorkers, Trinidadian/New Yorkers. I allowed myself, I really realized that I didn't heal fully when I got out. Externally, I looked normal, dressed normal, looked successful, looked everything, got married. But I still had internal damages from being incarcerated for that length of time. And I was at work. And the guy, I want to be clear, he did nothing wrong. I handle a situation with a prison mentality out in society. And for anyone that's listening that has been incarcerated, I want to caution them. If you come out in society with a prison mentality, you're going back in incarceration. You cannot handle mainstream America the same way that you would deal within, because incarceration is a subculture. It's not the mainstream of our society, but it is a subculture of our society. And you're going to go back. I physically put my hands on a coworker. And we know what happens after that. You can't just put your hand on people. Now, mind you, I accumulated a lot because I was home from 18 until 2020 when the incident happened. And I lost everything in a blink of an eye because of choices. I went back into incarcerated, they extradited me back to Maryland, where God's grace, still, God knows, God's a funny God, but he's a real God, because he knew my heart, and he said, hey, before he would sit me down for long periods of time, but he says, no, you got it right this time. You just allowed yourself to, didn't want to process things before you act. And I got extradited back, long journey back to Maryland. And I went through the process, the long journey back, getting booked in, getting processed in, paperwork, all of these things I had to go through all over again. Then I had to wait for hearings, for parole and things of that nature. You have to realize you got to deal with the initial charge. Then you have to deal with the fallout behind the charge. Mm-hmm. So now when you're dealing with all.
We're losing you.
There you go. You're back. I'm back. You're back.
Okay, I'm sorry. When you tie all those things on you, it's a recipe for disaster, because all this is new to me. My default was always the streets. So I don't have that default anymore, because I'm not in the streets, one, and two, I'm not relevant anymore. So I have to reinvent myself. And how I reinvented myself is my brother helped me, and he says, hey, you punch the streets all your life, and I punched the time clock all my life. The difference is I got mine a little slower, but I got it. And the moral of that is the hare and the tortoise. I started off real fast. I had nice cars, house, jewelry, clothes, popularity. I lost all of that. And the hair passed me, which is my brothers. They took the slow, steady route. And I passed it. Life was great. They asked me, could you help me with this, Sean? Could you do this for me? And I was the man everywhere and in the family. And while I was speeding, they were slowly going along with life, doing what life's supposed to do and being patient. Patience. And in the end, they have beautiful homes in Atlanta, very successful. And these are two men that didn't even graduate from high school. There's three of us. I'm the educated one, not stepping on my brother's toes, but I just want to show people when choice making has nothing to do with who you hang around or whatever. It's your power of choice. And unless someone puts a gun to your head or physically force you to do something, you have to deal with accountability of the choices that you make. I've been home now for a little over a year. I came home from the fallout. I was allotted. God showed me favor and put it in the hearts of the people. Amen. That because I was really supposed to go away for another probably about 6-7 years. The parole guy says, wait a minute, I'm not going to do that. This is something petty. This is not what he's used to. And I was just astonished. I was like, what? And he sat me down for a year. I came home. And I've been home for 14 months now. You lose things too when you make poor decisions. In that year that I was home, my mother had congenitive heart failure, and she passed away that I was incarcerated. Wow. So because of the choice making that I have to live now, that I wasn't at my mother's side. I wasn't at my mother's funeral. Once again, I failed the people that I love because of decision making. And you'll hear that word from me over and over again, decision making. Mm. And I made a decision, and the fallout was my mom passed, and I mourn every day that I wasn't there. So life is a series of journeys. I've been home 14 months. I had a friendy came into fruition in 2006. I got it trademarked and registered. It's a clothesline. Yeah. I got it trademarked and registered while I was incarcerated in 2012. I put it on the shelf because it's really not, I was working in the library, the prison library, and I did this much. I did my business plan. Mm. I did every resource that I could use for my limited powers of incarceration. And I chose the information hub, which is the library, intentionally, because I knew once I got to the library, I would have, and remember I said, I'm a charismatic. I know how to talk to people. And instead of using for manipulation to further commit crimes in prison, I just asked the librarian to do little favors, give me a little information. And she would, as far as hard numbers, hard facts that I couldn't, because I didn't have access to internet. And she would do these things because she's seen that I was legitimate in my cause. And once a person see that you're really serious and they believe in what you're doing, they will step out and they will help. I came home in 14 months. I came home and I've been home for 14 months. Decision-making. I want to say this again. Well, and I'm going to go into the company. Decision-making. I was working for a company called Ann Sachs. Mm-hmm. And I was making good money. I don't want to go into the numbers, but I was making money that I normally didn't make, with no formal training and college background. So I was like, God showed mercy again. And I didn't get it right again. I didn't put my hands on anybody. Right. And I felt like I was in the right. There was an exec and she talked to me very out of the way. And I responded back to her in kind. Again, she didn't appreciate that. She's an exec. How dare you? First, one, you're a lower level than me. How do you even respond to me like this? And I told her that I respect you and I deserve the same degree of respect. In short, a witch hunt was done. And she went on and my boss was on vacation and she was there filling in and she had her way. I made the choice and allowed myself to be put in a trick bag. They did an investigation and they terminated on the 18th December. Again, choice, decision making. So now I'm down here in the city, nice place that I relocated. And again, familiar story like I did in Georgia, rebuilt, got myself back up on track again because I'm a go-getter. And then I tore it down. The only thing is that I'm still here. God is still showing favor because job opportunities been filing in. And I know something. I don't worry anymore. I let God lead me. I don't worry like I used to get frantic and get desperate. And when a person is desperate, they're capable of doing anything. So I allow myself to be more spiritual in tune. I tap back into my spirituality base that my parents instilled in me. Well, my mother, I should say. And I sit every day with a comedy with no job and bills, notices coming in and bills, because I know at the end of the day, I know me one and I know my God. Now to go into a friend.
Right. So
I was in Georgia.
Okay. Sean, you going at so. So let's set the stage. So you had all these. No, it's all good. You had all of
this
these.
New.
It's all good, bro. He had all these challenges that really led up to now your business. So why? First of all, tell us what a friendly means to you? Why did you come up with that name? And then talk about your business from there.
Okay, a friendly, what it means to me is I've always been a fashionable dude. I was known for always highlighting with a lot of different fashions in New York in the 80s era of the club era. And that era, we didn't wear jeans and boots, New Yorkers. We wore silk shirts, Bill Blast suits, you know, gabardines, Bally's, Clarks. And we went to the clubs suited up like men. And I was always noted as a very fashionable person. So I said, wait a minute, I got, you know, more than something. As I matured at mine, when I started thinking about business and asking myself what I wanted to do, I still wasn't all the way mature, but it was in segments. At that time in 06, that's when the birth of Afrindi was born in my mind. And I said, man, I should get into clothes. I know about fashion, put some stuff together. So I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how or which way, who to go see, who to talk. I knew nothing about legal business. And I had no connections to any legal people such as yourself that maybe has companies or have execs, former execs that could guide me and counsel me. I have some of my friends or counterparts that were in the game with me. They were fortunate enough to have parents that were in execs or in corporate America, and they were able to use their money and they guided them on how to do so with their money. I didn't have that luxury. I had immigrant parents that didn't really have an understanding of that dynamics of business, just working people. So I squandered money. So now when I said Afrindi, I said, I'm going to go on. How do I start this? What am I going to do? So Afrindi was on the shelf for 06. And then 18, I brought it. I reemerged with it again. And I try to do limited things, trying to bring it in, like set up the infrastructure and all that. Then I went away again. And then I come home now. And funny story, I was in Atlanta for my birthday in October. And this is relevant to Afrindi. My brother and I, two brothers and I, we went into a boutique and we spent like maybe between the three of us nearly $1,000. And when we got out, we went in the car and he says, by the way, my brother is a business owner, my younger brother. He owns Long Island Inc. He owns a tattoo shop. I talked to him about this too. I'm going to try to see if I can go on and if, you know, that he'll agree to get on here and you could possibly give him an invite. And his story is amazing because I'll do mine. Like he's opened up the eighth one in April in Villa Rica, Georgia. Wow. So when we was in the boutique, we got out, he says, we were in the car. So before he started the car, he looked at me. He said, yo, what is the stuff that we bought? Because we buy, you know, I try not to buy trendy things. I try to buy black owned. I'm trying to take it back to post-slavery, introduction to segregation and the way that the leaders followed back then about boycotting, keeping it, because we're failing as a people.
Yeah.
And I want, so I said, listen, let's go to this boutique. I don't want to go to Lenox Square Mall. I want to find, so we went black on. We don't know this guy. I spent $100 for a t-shirt. I spent $150 for a sweatshirt. Don't know this man from anywhere. And all he did was vinyl press on a t-shirt. And all he did was went on and put a little embroidery on a sweatshirt and silk screen on it. And there you go, voila. And got a boutique.
Very profitable business.
Exactly. So I said, so my brother, again, my mind wasn't even on a friendly. My mind was on getting a job and getting, I mean, I was working already, working and stacking my money and building myself. So he said, yo, Sean, he was like, yo, you could do the same thing. You bought that. We didn't even know this guy. No one knows this man. And we just went in there and spent a rat. So he says, yo, why you don't do the same thing? So I said, how? He says, man, yo, all you got to do is just find out what the t-shirt said. I'm going to tell you what the equipment called. For Christmas, he bought all my equipment. The heat press, the laptop that I'm on right now, everything that I needed to operate. Then he forwarded me all the information as far as like setting up the infrastructure, as far as like advertising. Now I'm in the process after I spoke to, I was on the show on Tuesday. Was it Tuesday?
Yep, Charmaine.
I was on that group talk discussion and chat, and they were very informative, and they helped me put some pieces together to do the legal infrastructure of the company. So the company's not in actuality, but it's actual because I'm at the helm. You know, and I'm making sure that I'm doing everything to push it forward. And God is a funny God, like I said, but he's a God that knows what's needed for you when you need it. And even though I lost this job, I was able to do more, spend more of my time like doing this.
Absolutely, and we appreciate it. You know, and sometimes, you know, as entrepreneurs, you know, there's going to be some challenges, and sometimes you just got to, you know, take a step away. You know, I've known entrepreneurs who say, you know what, I'm going to step away from this. Let me go work a job so that I get my health in order, you know, get the business in order. And, you know, this pandemic, nobody could predict this, you know, so it impacted a whole lot of business. And, you know, what you're doing, you're finding the resources to get it done. I love the fact that you went to the library. You know, the library was that focal point for you to get your, you know, some people that we work with that are not formerly incarcerated individuals don't even know what a business plan is. I mean, they just hop in business and sometimes they hop out of business. So I commend you with, you know, the work that you have done.
Yeah. I was supposed to send Charmaine. I don't know if it was Charmaine, but I don't know. She told me where to send it, but I didn't know where to send it. I actually forgot the business plan. Because she email said she was going to, all right, I'll send it to you, email it to you. And then she said that, I guess you'll look at it and give me your critique on it.
It's a feedback. You know? Absolutely.
Right. I wanted to add into that. I forgot about that.
That's okay.
Brother Frank, I'm definitely extremely proud, man, of your persistence and your resilience through all of these challenges you faced and the trials and tribulations and how you persevered from a 12-year gap, because you said the original concept and idea started in 06, and then you hadn't brought it into actual manifestation until 18. So that's a 12-year gap. So most people would quit. Most people would give up. Most people would say, man, I'm not even going to even push this and pursue this no more. So I just applaud your courage and just your ability to just push through and just make sure that your dream came to reality. And timing is everything, man, you know, like you said. So I'm definitely proud of you. I do want to ask you a quick question about your support system, right? You just mentioned about your family who purchased the equipment for you to start the clothing line. Talk a little bit about and share with our guests how important having a support system is and having a team is.
Support system is paramount, because no one is an island by themselves, you know, because once you're gone, that's it. There's nothing else after you.
That's right.
But if you align yourself with people and you align with yourself with the people with the same vision and you walk a certain walk, remember, you asked about the support system. Remember, you have to have people that's patient and that sincerely love you. Patience is the first thing, and unconditionally loving.
Yeah.
And my parents, my brothers, they unconditionally love me. My parents are gone now, but my brothers unconditionally love me. Do they get upset with me? Of course they do. But they have patience because they know that I'm working and they know that I'm doing what I need to be done. Again, I didn't even go into that. God is so good. I told you he bought the equipment, but remember, my rent was due last month and I was out of work. He paid my bills for me last month. Mm. So that's a support system, especially when they know that you're doing everything within your power to do what's right. And if all he said, hey, listen, he said, bro, both of them told me, they said, man, listen, we always going to rock with you as long as you're doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, now I'm going to give you the flip side. My baby brother, when he feels like I'm deviating, that's the support system. That's where harsh admonishment and harsh love comes in. And people put you off on an island and they say, hey, I got to put you in timeout. Yeah. You ready to act like you got some sense? Then you come on, we'll bring you back around here. But while you behaving and carrying on like that, you got to go to timeout.
Period.
So I have a great support system, beautiful family. I never really enjoyed my family because I was in the streets. And because when I say this and I'm not glorifying, I wasn't a pretender of the street game. I was the epitome of the streets. And without going into depth, I did things that I'm not proud of. I hurt people. I robbed our society. My sister passed away of AIDS in 1995 as a result of getting high off of crack. As my maturity level came, I realized that, no, I didn't put the pipe in her mouth, but somebody else like me did it. So I gotta be careful of what I say on this site, on this ride presentation for purposes of being offensive or exclusive. But me, I have to say this.
Yes.
I love all people.
Yeah.
But I'm concerned about my people right now. See, everybody else concerned about their people.
That's right.
And I'm a humanitarian. But first, it says you can't change the conditions of yourself until you change. You can't change the condition of others until you change the conditions of oneself first. So that's applicable to you as an individual. Yeah. Us as a whole, we have to change the conditions of ourselves, the way we think. Business falling suit with that. We have to believe in ourselves where we start creating our own wealth.
Yeah.
And we don't do that.
I don't mean to cut you off, but what you just said was so profound in regards to your purpose now. I feel like you going through these trials and tribulations, you're recognizing that God still has you here for a reason. And the fact that you mentioned our community and some of the things and lessons that you've learned, share a little bit about real quick about what you feel like our community needs to focus on the most based on what you've experienced. Because you're still here for a reason. God still has you here. You know, you out in the streets. You're not behind a cell no more. You have free opportunity and endless possibility right now for your life. So what would you share to our community, young brothers and sisters in our community that are in that space where it's like, I can go this way or that way?
Right. And Sean, as you do that, you know, do that and then, you know, wrap up with your contact information.
Okay. I'm going to do it in a short summation. You don't want to go through it. I got bullet wounds. I got jail. I got prison reports. I got all the information. If you want, I'm going to give you this. I'll give the information. So anybody got any questions about prison, you may be the author of business and everything of higher learning and society. I'm the residential author of incarceration, sad to say. But the information that I have is valuable. Prison is no joke. Incarceration is no joke. I might add to it. Right now, I see a therapist. I'm in therapy because I know that I'm broken in areas in my life. For you young fellas that's out there, it's not worth it. Because when the lights go off and the party's over with, ain't nobody going to be around. I can promise you that. It's going to only be the ones that love you unconditionally. All those people that you were popping bottles and you was dripping with and you was doing all that with, they're not going to be around.
Right.
I promise you that. And for the last thing that I have for people in our society, I was part of a religious sect back in the 80s called the Five Percenters. And in New York, we talked about it.
Mathematics, what's the mathematics? I'm familiar.
Math, yes. G Cipher Divine. You know, I'm true and living. I still hold true to some of the, because mathematics is science. But it says, one of the degrees says, save our babies. And the reason why it says save our babies, because our babies is the future. See, we can't go to the future to save the future, which is us. We're dying off. We have to go back in the past and deal with our babies and build them up so they can make a better future. And last thing, we need to get back to the family dynamics. Yeah. There's no family dynamics. I grew up eating, I grew up taking naps. I grew up eating lunch.
Yeah, that's right.
Coming in for lunch. I grew up eating at the table with my parents and my brother.
Boy. Bring it.
There's no more of that. There's no unity, and we're getting further and further of human social interaction. Think about me. I'm not texting you. I want to talk to you.
Yeah.
And that's what I could offer to anybody. Anybody have any questions as far as in regards to anything? I could be reached. Sean Frank, I could reach that I'm kind of nervous.
Good, man, you're doing good.
Let me look it up. I have several emails. I want to give the one that, hold on 1 second.
Work on the reach out.
Here it is right here. My contact email is Mr.AFrank, as in my last name, 88@gmail.com.
Give that to him again, Sean. Give it to him again.
It's Mr.MR.A, as in Apple, Frank, 88@gmail.com.
Got it. Good deal. Really appreciate you as always. And thank you for answering the call when I said, hey, we need to hear your story. So really.
Anytime, anywhere, anytime, anything dealing with our brothers and our sisters and our community, I'm there. I'm with it.
Salute, bro. Yeah, tap in, man. Tap into the ride program, man. With so many.
Hey, show me the way. If somebody put the crumbs out there, I'm going to pick them up, I'm going to eat them. As long as they're good crumbs.
Absolutely, man. We're going to definitely, connect with you. So thank you for coming on. And as always, Leon, thank you for being there as well.
Leon, you have a great day, man. Good meeting you.
Likewise, bro. Much respect, man. Proud of you, man.
Thank you, brother.
All right, y'all, until we meet again, continue to discover new pathways. Don't forget, you can find past episodes of the Breakthrough Podcast at edacmorgan.com. That's edacmorgan.com. So edacmorgan.com, and just click on ride and you'll see all the activities that we have. Until then, continue to improve and progress. Peace.
Take it easy. Peace.
This is Mixed Map Production.